Let's go. Show, and I'm glad to be with you today, and I'm happy you're with me as well. We are coming at you live and uncensored today, and with me is my guest again, Samara, and we're going to be talking about gender. So I hope you're with us and listening and ready to learn some new stuff. I'm going to bring Samara in right now. Hello, Samara.
Hi, Deborah. Thank
you
for having me.
Hi, welcome back to the show again.
Thank you.
Hi, good to have you back. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. Are you enjoying the warm weather wherever you are? I know I am.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely warm.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to be talking about gender. And when I had you on the show before, so many very interesting topics came up, and I was doing a broad stroke. So I didn't want to delve into any one in particular, but this particular time I want to talk about what was like for you to grow up in Egypt. Is that correct? As
mm-hmm.
a Muslim under Islam, living with the Islam family, and
mm-hmm.
with the rules and the society and the expectations that go with being a young girl, a young female child growing up. So let's start by you just saying, what was it like growing up as a girl?
Well, and
one thing I want to do right now is just say really, really quick, anything you don't want to talk about, I don't want to share, just feel free to say nope. Or we can also talk in general. Rather
oh,
than
come on, Deborah. You know I like uncensored. you should read my book. I'm very uncensored. There's no taboos when we talk.
Okay.
Well, if I put one word to it, it felt limited because that's what it was. As a girl, you grow up understanding that your opinion doesn't count as an opinion of your brother or any male in your family because women are viewed as half a brain and half a religion. Yeah, there is one prophet speech that says that women are half a brain and half a religion. And then they explain to you that the wisdom behind it is that women get their menstruation and they go crazy a little bit. So you know, the regular PMS here, but apparently that was a defect. That's what makes us like not whole human. And the other part of it, half a religion, because when you have your period, you don't pray and you don't fast.
Oh,
so okay. Therefore, you're not allowed to practice your religion all the time, and you don't have your mental capacity all the time. And like the testimony of one woman is equivalent of half. So if you need one testimony, you need two women to equate one male testimony. It felt limited so much, especially that I grew up with a brother who was only a year and 5 days younger than me. I grew up hearing from my mother how she had to get pregnant right away because I was the first child and I wasn't a male, and it was a big disaster, emotional disaster for my family that I'm a girl.
Mm.
In fact, my mom showed me, like when you know, I was born in 73, so at that time they would send telegrams to congratulate each other on the birth of the child. She showed me the telegrams that my father received, and they were all like feel better.
Oh,
we were all
like
telegrammed and said, yeah, condolences. They were like, you're too young, or better luck next time. They weren't congratulating him. And my mother, like, out of, you know, she's a sweetheart, she was just showing me that you know, my birth was not celebrated like regular births because I was the first born, but I wasn't a male. And, like, they normally celebrate all the births. Like, on the seventh day of the baby born, there's, like, a big celebration where they invite everybody and have food. And but she said mine wasn't celebrated because I was a girl. Mm. and then she went on to show me a picture saying, oh, and this is the first time your dad held you. You were 6 months.
And
I go up like, oh, that's interesting. And this was things that they ingrain in you as a child, so you grow up accepting that you're not going to be treated equally, and that's just the law. This is how it is.
Yes.
I felt like I always had to, like, excel in education and try to win things, to try to win the approval and the love of my father, which really didn't happen. At one time, I won a very prestigious competition on, like, a nationwide in Egypt, and there was a celebration where they're going to give me, like, a silver platter or something.
Mm-hmm.
And my father said, oh, but if it was her brother, I would have won, but there's no point. She's just a girl.
Mm. Gosh, so, you know, I think that's very extreme. Definitely, but I think that we also in the U.S., growing up in the U.S. as girls, I know a lot of times we hear the same message that we're not good enough just because we're female. And some of the things that women have in common is the fact that we can take that and turn it into a positive for ourselves in a way of trying to prove that we're not less than, and we excel in places wherever we are, we excel. And in that sense, I think we have a lot in common, regardless of where we grew up as being female. So I really, really am glad that you're here and talking so candidly about your experience, because there are places where we connect. And that's what one of the things I always like to do when I do my shows is show where we connect, because there are too many places where we are being shown where we don't connect and where we're different from or seem to be different. And I really appreciate this. I really do. So when can you go back and identify a place where you started to say, you know, this doesn't feel right, being told that I'm not good enough just because I'm a female? Where is there a place where you can identify where
it,
you just really
happens
started to buck
around
that?
It happens around the same time of my divorce, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had my son who was like almost 4 years old, and one of my cousins called to, like, you know, to share sympathy that I got divorced, because it was a big disaster that I got divorced, and a lot of my family cut me off because I brought shame to them by being divorced. But, you know, long story short, he was talking to my 3-4-year-old, and then he told him, it's okay, and you're the man of the house now, and you should control your mother. And I took the phone and I hang up, and I was like, I'm not going to pass this message to my son. I'm not going to tell him that he's the responsible or the sponsor of me, and I'm not going to have this passed on. And I am in charge, because, see, in Islamic rule, and there's something called wali, and wali means like the sponsor, the one in charge of. And girls or women always have to have a person in charge of them.
Yes.
So when you're a girl, it's your father. If your father died, it's your brother, it's your uncle. Somebody has to be in charge of making the decisions for you. And when you get married, it becomes your husband. If you get divorced, it becomes your son, if you have a male son. And I just did not accept it. I did not accept it. And I was, I I was like, I am American, and I am a woman, and I am equal to men, and I'm not going to pass this message. I hang up on my cousin, and I was like, this is the end of this. I am less, because I am not less.
What did that feel like? Can you identify just so that people can, especially women, can really connect and find a place inside themselves? What did that moment when you hung up the phone? That took a lot, I'm sure.
It did, because he was like one of the few people in my family who was still talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
and offering support, but I just could not take his support because I wasn't going to accept this anymore. I decided I'm whole. I don't need another male to control me. And I saw that I was always controlled. Even with my American husband, I came with all my Arabic views and Islamic ideas. If I wanted to go out to buy groceries, I called him to ask permission to leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was very... I was practicing Muslim, and I like there is a rule. There is another speech of Muhammad, may peace be upon him, that says if a woman leaves her house, every step without her husband's permission, every step is followed by the devil. So I would call my husband at work and ask, can I go get groceries?
Mm.
I was really ingrained into the culture and the rules and the boundaries, and it felt that day that I'm liberated. I'm liberated of all this, and
okay.
This is what it meant to me to have my freedom to announce myself. I can support myself. I'm highly educated, and I can do this. I don't need I don't need to be under the supervision or have a person who was going to be in charge of me. And it was never going to be my three-year-old.
Yeah.
I did not want
What a burden to put on a three-year-old on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really odd thing to hear. And I wasn't, like, even listening on the phone. My son, when my cousin told him this, he came and get me. He's like, Mommy, what does he mean? I'm in charge of you now.
Hmm.
And because he couldn't fathom that he's hearing this. And I took the phone and I heard my cousin saying that, and I was like, I can't believe he's saying this to my almost 4-year-old, that now
yeah.
he's in charge of his mother.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty deep. One of the things that I hear you saying is that in order to envision a new life for yourself, you had to, from what I hear, I pretty much cut yourself off from the support or the people who were familiar to you in some way or another, emotionally or psychically, or is that correct?
I had to separate and make my way and prove to them that I could be self-sufficient and I could be successful and I can be a divorced woman. Divorce in Arab country is still hard. It's not very accepted, and it takes a long time for them to accept a woman being divorced because women are either virgin or married. They don't
yeah.
want what they call loose women, and a divorced woman is a loose woman by definition.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, my goodness, I have to tell you this. When I got divorced, some of their support was to get me a marriage proposal from other, family
mm-hmm.
member. Other cousins wanted to marry me
mm-hmm.
to save the family honor. They were like, and they found a person who was like, oh, and he's agreeing to marry you even though you're divorced. Because divorce meant to them like I'm used goods. I have to go have sale or something.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that's accepted. And they were like, oh, he's willing to marry you even with a child and divorce, as if like this is the big favor that this person is willing to do because he's related to my family. And I was like, no, none of that. I am not going to marry a person to save me from the shame. A divorce happened and I can be on my own.
Well, you mentioned something about family honor just a few minutes ago. Did you ever feel as though you were not, Did you ever feel threatened in your process of moving away from the part of what you're talking about? I think is Sharia law, moving mm-hmm. out of that whole system. Did you ever feel threatened in any way from outside forces, wherever?
I had to separate myself from people who were Muslim around me because they viewed me as a threat. They viewed me as a threat, like because of polygamy, because mm-hmm. Men would, you know, potentially could become interested in me. So all my female friends immediately cut me off. Because I became a threat now. What if their husband became interested in me and wanted me to become a second wife? Mm-hmm. So, in one shot, in the divorce, I got divorced from people who were my friends because I couldn't remain their friends any longer. And I had to deal with my neighbors who were Saudi and who immediately thought that made me a whore, that I was divorced and living on my own with my son. And one of the men who lived in the same apartment building asked me, so how much do I charge now?
You said nothing.
Well,
you mean for rent?
No, how much do I charge for sexual service since I'm divorced
okay.
now?
I had to
move away. I couldn't really stay in that same apartment building because, you know, I am Muslim, I'm divorced, and I'm living on my own. And even they lived in the U.S., and you would think they're more, you know, naturalized and acclimated. They immediately viewed me as, oh, she's going to remain divorced, and that means she's a whore.
Yeah. Part of, I think, what is happening and that is going against a lot of women who would do the same thing you do. And I have another question I want to ask you, and I'll throw this in real quick, is a lot of times people are living in neighborhoods that are predominantly Muslim or mm-hmm. whatever, and
yeah.
that makes it even more difficult because not only do you have to give up what's familiar inside the walls and probably your family, but you're also looking at your neighborhood and your friends, and it's very complicated for women to even become acclimated to what is available to them here in the U.S. And that's what leads me to the next question that I have, which is, what got you through? How did you go from? Where did you get your strength? I know it's inside. It comes from within because I have it as well. Mm-hmm. But how did you stay in contact with it? You know what I mean?
I think that it had to do with my childhood, having to fight for who I am and people to acknowledge that I am as equal as my brother, that sibling rivalry that I never won made me always want to prove people wrong. And I looked around and I said, I'm in a better situation. I'm not divorced in Egypt. I'm divorced in the U.S. And I'm luckier than my friends. If I have a friend who get divorced in Egypt, she's almost forced to get another marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of myself as fortunate, and that was I got it from being where I am. For I was living in Arizona at the time, and I felt like that's where I get my strength. I'm in here. I have equal rights as any other male, and I should act like it and claim my rights. I think I got it from being here. It really helped me. I was always wanting to prove people wrong, and being here and the land of opportunity gave me that, because I felt like if I moved out of that Saudi enclave that I was living in and mm-hmm. moved into a regular neighborhood, my neighbor is not going to stop me at the parking lot and ask me how much I charge just because I'm
mm-hmm.
divorced.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I did. I completely left that environment, and that was the beginning of my true naturalization. I felt like that's what I need to be with. I need to be with people who will view me as equal. and treat me as equal. And so that's what I did.
One of the things I hear you saying is that you looked around and saw what you had at your fingertips to help you get through what you needed to do. In other words, what I'm trying to bring out is for our listeners is that there, whatever situation you're in right now, whatever you're facing right now, you have things that you can use. You have assets. You have opportunities. You have maybe even people that can help you get your goals and help you do whatever it is you need to do. And that's what I hear and hear you saying, is that you were able to look around and say, look, yeah, I'm in a not so good spot right now, but what, in other words, make a little pro and con. What's the pro and what's the con list? And work on the pro, right?
That's exactly what happened. I found a group of divorced women who were successful, and some of them were single mothers, and I start doing activities with them. I start seeing myself as them. They are the people that I really give credit to helping me through the divorce. There is a friend who's still my friend. She just lives in Arizona right now, Patricia. Without Patricia, I probably wouldn't have been able to cross that divide and become who I am. And she made me realize I had that inner strength, and she brought it out to light. She's like, you don't need to be subject to all this. You could move out of this and live here, truly live here, not in a Muslim enclave. Just live with people who treat you equally. Mm-hmm. And I did. There were things when I lived in that community. There was another Iraqi lady who was really, really a good friend. She told me, oh, I can find you a husband, and all what we need to say is that you're actually a widow, not divorced, and then he will marry you. And I was like, do you expect me to lie in front of my son and say that his father died just to get an Arab husband? I was like, I would never do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of the Arab women in that community were trying to help me, but the way they were trying to help me was still within all the social and Arabic norms, and I'm like, I can't accept this anymore. I cannot accept this.
They were trying to help you stay where you were, in other words. Yeah, mm-hmm. Trying to help you stay stuck. And that's something that you run across.
Stay half. I'm unequal to a man. And I was like, I'm no longer half.
Yes. One of the things that I like to say and communicate to people is that everyone who offers help is not necessarily the help you need or the help that you even want to take. So that brings that out quite well. I appreciate that. We have about maybe 5 minutes left, and one of the questions I want to ask you is, if you were let's go back in time and if you were able to go back and talk to your little girl self, with the insight and the experience and everything that you have now, what would you say to that little girl sitting in Egypt, telling herself that, you know what, I'm not half? What would you say to her?
I would tell her it's going to be okay.
Yes. And
because there were times where I doubted that as a child. There were times where I faced adversity the whole time. The one day at school, I remember that we were learning Shakespeare, and I heard that all the world is stage. And I was like, why is my stage full of hecklers?
Oh, wow.
Why do I always
I love that.
Seriously, as a child in school, I heard that sentence for the first time. I was like, I am at the stage, but why do I have hecklers around me all the time?
And how do I get rid of them?
How to quiet those voices that keep telling me I'm not who I am.
I love that. Yeah, I hope you don't mind if I use that sometimes.
Absolutely use it.
I will give you credit as well.
Thank you, Deborah.
So So you would go back and tell us, okay, the hecklers will shut up eventually.
You will quiet those voices.
It'll get better. Just keep believing in yourself. Yeah. So one, I always want you to talk about your book that you have, and if you are listening and you want to find out more about Samara's book, you can go to my website. I have a link there, and it'll take you right to her book. But give them a little short version of what you would like to share today.
My book, When the Veil Drops, talks about that period of my life, the divorce, talks about the different relationship that I got into. Right now it has more enemies than friends. It's kind of banned within the Islamic community. I recently saw a flyer banning the book and things like that. But
you know, a lot of times that works for you.
Yeah, as long as they don't put fatwa on my head, I think I should be fine.
Oh, no. We don't want to do that.
It's my book, and it's definitely uncensored. It's me uncensored. I spoke my mind, and it's definitely not just a memoir, but it's like how can I say it? I put myself in the book, and you could read it and become my best friend, or you could read it and hate me. You could read it and dislike me. It's all okay. But once you read this book, you will know everything in my life. I did not leave any chapter out. I put everything in the book.
Yes, and that's one of the things that I like so about you so much. You're very honest and straightforward, and I love that. I do. I love that.
Thank you, Deborah. I enjoy being on your show, and I'll come back anytime you want me.
Well, that will be next Friday. We will be talking about another topic.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
That's all I have for you today. Thanks for listening. Let me know you're out there. I know you are. And join me again next week. Same time, same station. You can call live if you like. DeborahELake.com is where you'll get all the information. Until next time, world.